Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. It is Labor Day, September 3rd. It's good to have you be with us on this special day. And I know many of you are enjoying family and friends, as you should. But we're here providing you information about what's going on in the mortgage industry. This broadcast is specifically focused on politics. And we're going to be focused on politics until November 6th, and when we go to the polls to vote. It's really important. This election probably is one of the most critical for our country, certainly one of the most critical for our industry. These two candidates will be deciding the future of the mortgage industry and possibly the future of our economy. For this reason, we've got a lineup of really good guests on future broadcasts. Next week, we're going to have with us David Stevens, who is with United Capital Markets, who is one of the foremost leading authorities on servicing. We're going to talk about what does the outcome of this election mean to servicing. And then the following week, we've got Tom Piercy coming on of IMA. Tom is one of the experts in the area of valuing servicing and trading servicing. And we're going to get his input on what this election means to the value of servicing, where we can anticipate it going based on these two candidates and of which one gets an office. Then the following week, the end of the last week of September, we're going to have Les Parker. And Les is going to be talking about the secondary markets, what it means to what can we anticipate with or without a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, what it's going to take to really draw private investors into the secondary markets. So you're going to not want to miss any of these broadcasts. We've got a bunch of them lined up. Again, broadcasting on politics and the mortgage business. I've been saying for some time, politicians are getting involved in our business. About time we get involved in theirs, don't you think? But if we are going to get involved, we do need to do so on an informed, intelligent basis. And that's what we're hoping to accomplish over the next series of broadcasts over September, October, and into November to help you go at this on an informed basis. Appreciate you being with us each and every week and telling others about the broadcast. And without further ado, let's get in and finding out what's going on in the markets. Joe Farm, well, happy Labor Day. What are you going to be up to this fine day?
I'm going to spend some time out to the lake, maybe do a little dove hunting. It's opening day of dove season here, and I'm just going to try to stay cool.
Well, enjoy it, and happy Labor Day. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast. What went on this week in the world of mortgage rates?
Well, it was another good week for mortgage rates. It's second week in a row.
Yeah.
You know, I have talked a lot about what happened since Mario Draghi made his comment about doing whatever
right.
it takes. That was late July.
Right.
And following those comments, you might recall we had about a 200 basis point drop in mortgage prices. Not in rate, but in mortgage prices.
Right.
This week and last, we've recovered almost 150 basis points of that. So it's we're getting back up to where close to where we were, not quite to where we were, but it's real nice to have seen that. And this week, Dave, most of what happened today. It's Friday. We're recording
right.
this, and
yep.
and so on Friday, all of it followed comments made by Ben Bernanke at the summit, the economic summit in Jackson Hole.
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't say much, you know, like he never does. He didn't commit to new QE3, but he made it clear that it was very possible that the economic conditions would warrant and they're ready to do something if they would. So investors took that to mean the chances of QE3 are increasing. As that happened, mortgage prices went up, mortgage-backed security prices went up, stock prices went up. Gold prices went up, all of which you expect to happen with more QE3.
Right.
So that was the big driver this week. It was really a fairly quiet week up until today. The economic events over the week were mixed, so it really wasn't a big push from the normal resources. Pending home sales were, and factory orders were a little better than expected. Consumer confidence and Chicago PMI were a little worse than expected. Second quarter GDP was revised higher, all the way up to 1.7%, which is nothing to be proud of, up from 1.5%. And then core PCE rose, it rose 1.6% over the last 12 months, which is a very comfortable, if not almost low, inflation rate. But certainly inflation is not a concern for the market.
This week's going to be a short week. What's on the calendar, and what does it look like?
Well, a couple of big events. On Thursday of this week is an ECB meeting. It's a much like Bernanke's speech today was highly anticipated. The ECB meeting is highly anticipated. It's likely that they'll talk about the plans to provide aid to the struggling countries and the requirements that go along with it. There's a bit of an impasse going on right now where Spain knows they need the aid and ECB wants to provide the aid, but Spain doesn't want to ask the ECB for the aid until they know what the consequences are, and the ECB doesn't want to tell Spain what the consequences are until they ask for the aid. So something's got to change there. So that'll happen on Thursday. On Friday is the jobs report, and with the Fed meeting the following week, that's going to have an even added significance. Only 130,000 jobs are expected, so we'll see what happens there. Prior to that, not much going on in the economic news in the U.S. The ISM index is an important event, and that's on Tuesday morning. But next week, primary focus, ECB meeting on Thursday and jobs report on Friday.
And if we see the jobs report come in below expectations, puts more and more pressure on quantitative easing. Another QE3 may just puts more and more pressure to see that happening. Joe, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
We're talking about politics on this broadcast and each and every broadcast we have. We got some wonderful guests, Joe, lined up for throughout the month of September. But love to get your thoughts. You listened to the Republican convention. Would like to get your thoughts on when you heard Romney speak, Ryan speak. Your whole takeaway from the Republican convention.
Well, I said this in the past. I think our industry needs to be a little concerned about it. Romney has long been an advocate for limiting the mortgage interest deduction. I know the realtors were strong at the convention trying to promote a position that did not do that, but that's part of it. The Republican side, I think, is a little more likely, and in their convention platform, they made it clear that they'd just as soon not have the Fannie Freddie kind of arrangement where the industry's so driven by what their guarantee. I think we all know that there's significant change ahead, and I think both parties are going to get to a similar position in the long term.
Right.
My thoughts are that the Republicans might get there a little quicker, and so the question is, will we get to a place that's better or worse? It's certainly going to be different. It's hard to imagine a market that does not have a Fannie Freddie type entity that's developing consistent programs, underwriting standards, all the things that everyone referred to, the Fannie Mae standard is this and this and this. And so if we get away from that, it's going to make our industry, more complicated, to be quite honest.
It is, Joe, and I think it's going to be fascinating. We'll have to see what the Democrats are proposing and what comes out of the convention. Housing has not been one of the major talking points, and that's disappointing for a mortgage banker and someone who tracks, as you and I do, housing and its significance in the economic landscape. But hopefully we'll hear some more as we get into the political debate between now and November 6th. Big, big time thought.
Dave, I wanted to add it seems to be an increasing rhetoric regarding positioning the agencies to no longer be the desired outlet, meaning today, just announced, the guarantee fee increase, a second round of guarantee fee increase. So the stated purpose behind that guarantee fee increase is to get the guarantee fee more in line with what the private sector might charge if they were issuing the guarantee. And so that the speed with which you hear about those things are beginning to pick up, and maybe that's politically motivated given where we are in the election. Excuse me.
Well, anything we could do to get it priced in such a way where we see private investors encouraged back into the market. I think there's a consequence, though, if the federal government's in this. I think this is what the Republicans' position is. If the government's in it, then the government could come in, you know, reduce the guarantee fee dramatically and thus pick up a bunch of the market share and force, you know, put private investors at a disadvantage. I mean, that's why I think there's the general consensus. Let's shut these two down. Let's not even have that be the threat. Get the government totally out. But, Joe, that just worries the heck out of me. Fannie and Freddie have been there like mom and dad. I mean, they're like the parents to the mortgage industry. Don't want to see them go away. Can't imagine life without them. But we need to get the private markets back. There's no question about that.
I agree, Dave. Either of the two parties is inclined to do it so quickly that they disrupt what little bit of a housing recovery we have going. Clearly, both of them are going to take us to the point where there's not quite as much involvement from the government. But I read something today where one of the National Mortgage News article writers indicated that it was his opinion neither of them wants it to go away because they have so much power when they control it.
You know, that's fascinating. I'm not sure we're going to see the federal government out of the mortgage industry anytime soon, certainly not from a regulatory standpoint. CFPB is going to be here to stay for a long, long time, whether we want it or not. I don't care which party gets into power. But I would like to see the federal government be there in some way, shape, or form, offering some type of credit guarantee to investors that are in there. It's not saying that we have another Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, or we continue with those two, but certainly have some type of credit guarantee for those investors that are there. Anyway, just a thought. We look forward to be talking about this throughout the rest of this month and on into all the way up to the election, November 6th. So stay tuned to all the broadcasts we've got coming up. We're running a series nonstop between now and the election about politics and what these two candidates mean to our industry. You're not going to want to miss the broadcast all the way right up until the election. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back to the broadcast. We have a special guest today, Jerry Ault, who is president of Logs, L-O-G-S, and he's been there since 1988. Logs is based out of the Chicago, Illinois area. Logs provides services related to home retention, legal services, title services, REO services. Jerry manages the National Operations Division of Logs that advises and works closely with attorneys involved in real estate matters such as foreclosure. Because of his expertise in foreclosures and because that topic is such an important topic and such a hot topic in politics today and the way foreclosure has been handled, and because of his success in that area, I wanted to get Jerry on the broadcast to ask him what he thinks it means if we have four more years of Obama and our current political structure, or what it means if we have a Romney administration and a change in the House and Senate. Certainly it's going to be more than just the administration that's going to dictate this, but the administration has a tendency to set the tone for what the rest of the branches of the government are going to be doing. Jerry, good to have you on the broadcast.
Thank you, Dave.
Jerry, you had an early start in getting involved in politics. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, we shared this in an earlier conversation, and it's only by going back that I realized that I got involved in politics at a pretty early age. I happened to go to school in Flint, Michigan, which was the true birthplace of the automobile, no offense to Henry Ford, and, you know, was really a factory town, and then moved, our family moved about 10 miles out to a small suburb of Davison, Michigan. And through happenstance, and you talk about political affiliations, I'm not going to make a commercial here, but one of my classmates that I went through grade school and high school with was Michael Moore.
Michael Moore, for those of you who don't remember, is the Academy Award-winning independent film director that did the movie Roger Me, which featured Roger Smith of the who is president of GM. And then also he did Fahrenheit 9/11. So, I mean, he's got some pretty radical films out there that are definitely left of center, so to speak. Michael isn't exactly your average classmate, so that's quite a beginning.
We happened to graduate from high school in 1972, and that was the year that the 18-year-old vote came in. So I found myself being a longtime friend of his, and we went to church together. We were in Boy Scouts together, et cetera, that he decided that he was going to run for the local school board. And several of us got together and assisted him in that effort, going door to door, talking to people who may not have had in mind electing a youth to that position, but did end up, helping him, and he successfully ran for and was elected to the school board in the fall of 1972. But I also went on to college at Oakland University, a local state regional college, and was approached, and I don't remember this many years later how I was approached, but someone came to me and asked if I would help with registering 18-year-olds for the upcoming national elections. I ended up being the chairperson, if you will. I think I may have been the only person doing it at the time, but worked on campus and signed up however many, hundreds or thousands of those students and made sure that they were ready for the election. But I ended up doing it on a nonpartisan basis and along the way spoke to the campaigns for both Nixon, who was running for re-election in 72, and for George McGovern. Got invited to both of the celebrations on the evening of the national election and ended up not going to either one, by the way, because I didn't own a sport coat at that point. My was, I suppose, the summer of 72 would have been the beginning of working in politics, or at least taking an active part, which I think everybody should do.
So given your early political background, I'm wondering if you had any affiliation with Mitt Romney, who is also from Michigan State.
Well, certainly if you follow that string far enough back, I should have some affiliations to Romney, since his father was governor of my home state for a number of years, and an excellent one, as I recall. But I thought about this in connection with this interview, and let's get away from what's already happened, the HAMP programs, the HARP programs, and the like. But take a look at, from our perspective, or from my, outsider perspective, outside the beltway of what can happen here. One example of the need for government to stay involved, I believe that I heard the first quarter 2012, nearly 100% of all originations of loans were made by some government support, 25% FHA, and the other 75% with the margin of error was all GSE. So I think if you look at what do the administrations do when they go into this next term, I think whether you're Democrat or Republican, you need to recognize that there's not enough private money support for mortgage lending and that the government has to stay involved. I mean, that's the way I see it, and I think that that's going to stay on. Now, whether under the Republicans you'd see a more rapid progress toward a reorganization of the GSEs or not, I'm not sure that I can tell you that that's going to happen. But I do believe that both parties have to recognize that private investors are not in the market today because of the uncertainty that surrounds mortgage lending, mortgage servicing, and the collection practices. They don't necessarily care about the yield. If there's a 17% yield, certainly you can take more risk because of the return. When you're looking at 3 to 4%, you need to take a lot of the risk out. And with the government resisting at this point, but a lot of conversation going on about principal write-downs that might impair the collateral of the loans that are supported by private investors, that's a risk that probably isn't worth, undertaking. You've got uncertainty in the housing market altogether. Are prices going to stabilize? Are we going to see inflation? And so I think that opportunity exists to provide stimulus, and whether that's through government support and stimulus programs and road rebuilding under the Democratic platform, or whether it's the free market economy saying we're going to let businesses decide for themselves how to grow and expand, we'll create jobs that way, either party will fail in the short term to refinance, if you will, the mortgage industry unless they can create that stimulus, unless they can create jobs, get unemployment down, and as a result of that, start to stabilize the housing market.
Great perspective. Folks, our guest is Jerry Ault, president of Logs, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mike Frantoni, good to have you on the broadcast again. With all the uncertainty going on in the industry, Mike, these conferences are so important. You have an upcoming conference. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, thanks, Dave. I think you're right. There really has never been a more important time to focus on risk management and quality assurance issues. And that's why we put together this conference, which is September 9th through the 11th in Dallas, MBA's Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum.
Tell us a little bit about the content of this conference.
Certainly. So we're going to have a couple of general sessions focusing on changes in the regulatory environment, managing risk within your organization day-to-day, both loan by loan and across your institution, and managing risk in the context of these new regulations. And as such, we're going to have speakers from the FHA, from Ginnie Mae, CFPB, and from some of the bank regulatory agencies. Then we're going to have a large number of concurrent sessions in four tracks: risk analytics, underwriting, servicing QC, and quality assurance. You know, topics ranging from mitigating repurchase risk to developments in automated underwriting, looking at the latest from the rating agencies, and then the reemergence of manual underwriting. You've had too much reliance on AU in the past, and now you're having underwriters having to get back to basics and learn what it takes to underwrite a loan manually.
A lot of people need to be at this. How can they learn more? What's the website?
So you go to the MBA website, www.mortgagebankers.org, and it's right in the upper right there. It's the RMQA conference, Risk Management and Quality Assurance, September 9th through 11th in Dallas.
Listeners, I encourage you to be at these conferences. This is important, especially with all that's going on, as we talk about here on the radio program regularly. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the broadcast and telling our listeners about this important conference.
Thank you, David. Look forward to seeing everybody there.
Welcome back to the broadcast, where our special guest today is Jerry Ault, president of Logs. As we discussed before we went to the break, Jerry's involvement in politics started at a very young age and with some really interesting people. Michael Moore, he went to school with Michael Moore. Whether you like Michael Moore or you respect him or you don't, the reality is the guy has been successful at getting his point of view across. So there's some lessons that can be learned from that. Jerry, you're friends with Michael Moore. You went to school with him. You obviously spent enough time with him. What do you think was the key to his success to get his point of view as well published and out there?
He's more about asking the questions and not proposing the solution. You know, he's like, why are we doing this? You know, why don't we have health care, for instance, when he did that that particular movie, which I can't remember the name of it now, the one where he went up and he checked out the Canadians, just took a boatload of people to Cuba. It's rough and it's over the edge and it's like, really? And you tilt your head and go, geez. And, you know, to some extent I go, I'm his friend and I hide under a blanket, you know, but he asked the question that makes people at least consider it, as opposed to maybe some ideologues on the far, far right who simply say, no, this is the only way.
Jerry, I'm concerned about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. When you start talking about, you know, ideologies and what needs to be done and the lack of depth of discussion on this, it's a bit troubling to me, especially with what we've heard thus far in this election. You look at what the Democrats are doing. They're accelerating the wind down of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And if you listen to the Republicans, they sound like they just want to do away with them altogether. But no one's giving us a real any kind of definition as it relates to what we're going to put in place to replace them. Give me your thoughts on all of this.
I agree with you, Dave. There is a lack of definition to what I've heard so far on the Republican side and their proposed acceleration of the wind-down of the GSEs. Despite what you may think about what they've done in the past, how they've handled themselves, the GSEs did have and continue to have a very important role in our housing market. The FHA's mandate, in fact, which led to some of the problems that they've got with the losses that were incurred, was that their mandate and even, you know, OFAO before FHFA directly started supervising them, said that they, being the GSEs, needed to provide affordable housing. And to the extent that they are out of the marketplace, number one, I agree with you that I'm not, at my level, seeing a rush to the market of mad money from other countries or from private institutions that is going to replace the funding that's made available through the GSEs. So that's on the one side. And on the other, I would be fearful that a lot of people who will be necessary to take up the slack in our housing recovery aren't going to have access to credit. And there I'm talking about immigrants, low-income families, and particularly young families that don't have credit history.
Jerry, what about FHA and first-time home buyers?
There was a different role between FHA and Fannie and Freddie. I mean, FHA, like the VA, are insurance programs. So that's different than being the ultimate investor in the loan. But, yes, we saw a paradigm shift from the early 90s through to, say, the early to mid-2000s, where the percentage of FHA originations continued to decline and the number of GSE originations rose to the point where, I don't know the precise numbers, but in the early 2000s, even when there was lots of money available for any kind of lending programs, I think 60 or 65% of all the new loans being made in the United States were either Fannie or Freddie. FHA essentially disappeared. In the early days when I was doing foreclosure work back in Michigan, predominantly the loans that we saw were FHA. And if they weren't, there was, you know, 15% or so that were VA. And it was few and far between, and especially with banks, it was unlikely that you were going to see very many conventional loans. They just didn't exist. Fannie Mae at that point was an investor in some of the FHA pools, but they didn't appear to be taking a predominant role in the origination process, and that changed over the decade of the 90s.
I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position here, but what do you think should be done with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
Again, from my perspective, and I'm not sitting inside the rooms, you know, sharing the pros and cons of either proposal, there are people and technologies and mechanisms inside both of the GSEs that should probably be cherry-picked to create a unified GSE, whatever it's going to be, whether Fannie Mae, and it ends up being a morph of the two, or whether it's a new institution altogether, saying that we're going to pour the best of class of both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into that space. You know, perhaps Freddie Mac is much better at multifamily housing, and Fannie Mae is significantly better at reaching the first-time homebuyers and low income.
Jerry, how would you compare and contrast both the two parties, the Republican and the Democrats, and the two candidates that are running as to the outcome with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
The Democrats, I mean, the current administration, it's not just the White House, but the Congress put together today, and I'm not so sure, and that's why I paused here, whether Obama himself or Romney himself are really going to make the difference when we get at the level of you know, reconstituting the GSEs. But it's going to be up to Congress to decide to what extent support of the housing market is important to the recovery of the nation. And I would posit that it's extremely necessary that the government maintain some role. Both from an affordability standpoint and from a risk-sharing standpoint, if I was a private investor in the market, the reason I'd like to see the government involved is if it's all private money that's required to be put into the marketplace, what do we do about the attorney generals? What do we do about the OCC? What do we do about the CFPB that may come in and change the rules and in the future impair our ability to recover that collateral to conduct a foreclosure in a timely and cost-efficient manner and to put those properties back out into the marketplace to recover the value that we put into the initial loan. So having the government involved to some extent, hey, you know, I'm with, you know, my friend and my friend's part of the government, and so maybe we get a little better level of protection there.
Jerry, what do you think is the most significant issue facing our housing and mortgage industry?
Dave, I don't certainly pretend to have all of the answers here on what the most significant issue is facing our housing market, but I think underlying it is a social issue, and the answer to that social issue probably gets answered differently depending on whether we have a Republican-controlled Congress or a Democratic-controlled Congress. And this is the issue I see that underlies all of the mortgage market on a social level. Are we going to continue to be proponents of the dream of home ownership? Does the American dream include single-family home ownership? I think the Democrats will tell you it does, and that to the extent the government needs to be involved to help that come true, then there will be continued support at some level, whether it be through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or some yet-to-be-devised federal agency. On the Republican side, if you really take that to and extend it out to a total free enterprise system, then we may see a return to the 19th century and early 20th century model of predominantly renters. It doesn't mean there isn't housing available. We happen to have a lot of inventory, and Fannie Mae has been, you know, a big proponent in their REO programs of saying we favor sales to investors who will hold the property for rent, because it recognizes, and I think other people in this industry recognize, that there's a need for housing, even if the buyers or the borrowers, the homeowners, either lack the capital to put the equity in to qualify for a loan under today's standards, or, and I think this is just as dominant as the other factor, are afraid of putting money at risk in an uncertain market and would rather rent for the time being. So are we going to go down the path of trying to find a way to restore housing finance to what it has been over the last 10 or 15 years, or are we going to let this cycle continue and get ourselves back to a point where we have a significant renter population, even if those are renters in single-family houses as opposed to multifamily units?
Interesting.
Well, I think there's another factor here that at least was obvious to anybody who was in contact with this borrower base, especially when they were in distress. And that's what my business has been for the last 30-odd years. When my father, you talk about the prior generation, when my father built the house that we grew up in, and he went and got it, I'm sure it was an FHA mortgage at 6%, he intended to pay that off according to its terms, and 20 or 30 years later would own it. But he never thought of that as an investment decision, that you bought a home to raise your family. What happened through the 90s, from about 93 or 94 through till pretty much the crash in the mid-2000s, was that increasingly you saw people viewing their single-family house as another investment vehicle.
Right.
In the same way that they'd be playing in the stock market, they were gaming the system, counting on continually lowered interest rates, continued mobility financially for themselves, and on the increase in value that seemed to be inexorable in the home that kept creating an opportunity for them to cash out and move up socially and economically. And when the housing market simply stopped growing enough to make that a good bet, that's how we, you know, came to a sudden, abrupt, and disastrous fall.
Jerry, I'm going to ask you the question I get asked on television a lot, and that is, where are we at in this debacle? Are we almost through it, or are we just halfway through it? Where do you think we're at?
I've heard different numbers, and I talked to someone back when I started Heart Financial at Freddie Mac who said, oh, you shouldn't worry. By the third quarter of 2009, this is all going to be behind us. And I was incredulous at the time, and it turns out, you know, hopefully I wasn't the only one, but you know, certainly it wasn't going to recover that fast. I don't know that we're halfway there yet. And the reason I don't know is because there are factors that will play into the recovery of the housing system that haven't fleshed themselves out. unemployment is at record highs. The willingness, as we just discussed, of some people to put their money into single-family housing is still a little suspect. And I think that we're going to have to get some of these other factors. It really boils down to, and I said this once before, and I probably quoted somebody's name, I can't remember, but I said, you know, at the end of it all, it's the economy dummy. Without the economy being strong enough to support it, any of the programs, whether they're proposed by this administration or the next, are doomed to either dismal performance or to failure.
Jerry, where do you see foreclosures at, and are we out of the woods?
The foreclosure volume isn't back up to the levels it was in 2009 or even early 2010 before the robo-signing crisis came about, and that's attributable to a couple of reasons, the most significant of which, I think, is that many, especially the larger institutions, are still working on retooling their internal processes, going back and reviewing their documentation, making sure that the you know, the chain of custody of documents is pristine, and developing, as I mentioned just a moment ago, those external audit standards, and you know, really creating out of whole cloth the idea of, you know, how do I measure the success, how do I measure the risk associated with the foreclosure process, and so that slowed things up. The other reason that we haven't seen as much foreclosure activity out there is that we've seen a number of, you know, state-by-state slowdowns. New Jersey prohibited for more than 6 months most of the major servicers from initiating a new foreclosure. You look at Florida, where the infrastructure of the court system in Florida just doesn't have the bandwidth necessary to absorb more foreclosure activity, notwithstanding there's a tremendous number of defaulted loans. And so that's that choke point, if you will, there, you know, makes it somewhat unrealistic to assume that you can push thousands of new foreclosures in the system and see them, you know, come through on the other end as REOs and get back into the marketplace. So there's a lot of reasons why we're not at full production there, but I think that we're going to see that clear itself up. I think especially the bigger institutions have been able to figure out how to comply with the Dodd-Frank requirements and the requirements of the OCC review or the AG settlement, and we're going to see some forward movement there over the coming months. I think the next several years, 2 or 3 years, are going to continue to be pretty high levels of foreclosure compared to historically what they, you know, would have been.
Our guest is Jerry Ault, president of LOGS, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Our special guest is Jerry Ault of LOGS, and we're talking about the market politics. Let's continue on with our discussion. Jerry, one of the questions that I have, and I get asked a lot on television, is should we just hurry up and push through all these foreclosures as quickly as possible, or is that going to have a negative impact on the property values, and should we just move these foreclosed properties into the market on a more controlled and scheduled basis?
It's a little of both. There's no particular reason to speed up a foreclosure today so that you can get that property back into your REO department and then be unable to sell it because of, the market is starting to recover in certain places. I've heard from numerous sources that in, for instance, Marin County in California, no properties go to foreclosure because the housing demand is so robust that there's someone waiting in the wings to buy every single house that comes up to the market. But, counterbalancing the argument that maybe I should go slower if I'm sitting there as a servicer and give the borrower more opportunity to rebound or for the market to value to increase so that they can do a short sale and get closer to a favorable resolution for both sides, you've got to keep in mind as well that, you know, if 9 or 10% of all mortgages are in default, then 90% are paying on time. And the risk to our economy and to the recovery of housing prices across the board is that in some neighborhoods, those prices are being depressed because of the number of vacant or distressed homes that continue to sit in the market. They're not being sold because they can't get through foreclosure. You're seeing more and more deferred maintenance on those properties. They're becoming, you know, delinquent not only in the eyes of the mortgage company balance sheet, but they're delinquents, if you will, for the municipalities in which they sit. You take into account that you could buy a house in any market. Let's go to Henderson, Nevada, outside of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I bought a home there because my son was going to UNLV a few years ago. And when we looked in three zip codes, there were 5,000 properties listed for sale.
Wow, 5,000 properties.
Now, if I have an opportunity to buy a house in a neighborhood with or without foreclosed and boarded up properties on it, which do you think I'm going to pick? As long as there's an excess of inventory, those neighborhoods that happen to be situated where there's a higher percentage of delinquent houses are not going to rebound in value.
Right. Until
we can do something about getting those delinquent borrowers through the system.
Jerry, is it your opinion that the solution is found in the free markets and now they're just working through this mess? Or is there a government solution that can be bring about effective change and hasten us through this mess?
Yeah, there's certainly some impact of the government and its inability to make a decision. You know, and we can go to things that are as basic as and happen to be important stump speak subject matter for both parties, things like debt ceiling. You know, if you look at that and you say, well, you know, that's just Washington doing what it does, but the failure of Congress to address the debt ceiling had to have caused uncertainty in the marketplace. Again, going back to the earlier things we talked about of the need to bring some private investment money into the U.S.
Right.
Why would I want to bring money into the U.S. if it turns out that we're going to have some dramatic and devastating turn of events in our economy as a result of something that, you know, for decades and decades had just been dealt with in due course, which is, well, we'll raise the debt ceiling, you know, and we'll extend it for a year or two at a time. So I think partisanship there raised its ugly head, and for anybody who understood what the impact would be, the ripple effect to the whole country, it was a bad time, you know, for us to point to our leadership in Washington and say, thank God that you're there for us.
It seems like, Jerry, that a good number of people are looking to the government for a solution and to leadership for a solution. Is that realistic?
Well, I wish that I could tell you that there is a federal solution to the problem of delinquent homes and foreclosure crisis, but there really isn't. And I've debated this with, you know, a lot smarter attorneys than myself. You know, the ownership of real estate is strictly local. It's strictly state. And the federal government, despite the fact that there may be some exceptions from taxation if you have a federally guaranteed loan or whatever, you know, you're not going to get so far as to strip states' rights. Constitution doesn't provide for it, and I don't think there's a willingness on the part of either political party to attempt to move to that level where we create a federal foreclosure statute. But that being said, one of the greatest barriers we have is the disparity in treatment of loans from one jurisdiction to the next. In Texas and in Georgia, for instance, you still have a relatively short, and I'm talking about a month and a half to 2 month process from the time a loan is through the collection process and you're going to push it into foreclosure until you get the title of that property back and you can evict the prior owners and put it back in the marketplace. Contrast that with New York, where 600 days maybe, depending on whether you're in the boroughs or not, for you to be able to get the same level of relief.
I agree it's not a federal solution, but how are the states dealing with this?
You find states that are creating barriers to foreclosure. We've got more and more mandatory mediation statutes. We've got certification statutes for the legitimacy of your documents. District of Columbia is one example where I heard one attorney characterize it as, under the new law, it would be a felony to prosecute a foreclosure.
Wow.
And I think the impact of that, and again, that, I'm paraphrasing the quote, but he was paraphrasing the impact of the laws, but you run a danger of getting back into a redlining situation where there may not be an availability of credit in some of these states as a result of the oppressive and obstructive laws and regulations that are put in place. And I really don't have an answer as to how the federal government is going to cut through that. You know, when the attorney generals made their settlement, there was maybe a long discussion about the states trading off and allowing for some kind of uniform foreclosure process. I suspect it never got on the table. That was strictly political. It was all about making a statement on behalf of the consumers. And if you were going to pay that many billions of dollars, maybe somebody should have kicked in a few more billion and said, and here's a uniform foreclosure statute. You know, we're going to make these allegations, we're going to produce this documentation, we're going to provide this opportunity for an appearance and defense by the borrowers. But if, in fact, we get past that and everybody accepts that there's a default and it's not going to be cured, then we want rapid resolution out the back end. And we're not seeing that, and as a result, there is such a dissimilarity between the so-called easy states, like a Texas, and the really difficult states, Florida, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Illinois, Pennsylvania.
Jerry, we're almost out of time. What are your closing comments and your thoughts about all this? I mean, there's been some great dialogue here in this interview, and I really appreciate it. With only 64 days left before we go to the polls and vote, what would you like the industry to consider? What would you recommend that we be focusing on as we look at this election, and any recommendations to these candidates that are going to be battling it out over the next 64 days?
Wonderful if in the course of having a conversation about these topics, we had a light bulb go on and we said, oh, great, we hadn't thought of this before. Here's the quick fix. But it really doesn't exist. The housing market is going to recover as a result of dealing with these delinquencies one loan at a time. Stephen Forbes spoke at a conference where I was in attendance. Actually, I believe it was a five-star conference 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, he made a comment, whether you believe him or not, I think this comment's extremely accurate. He said, we all know what the problem is, but if we fix all of the problems at once, we will undermine the entire banking and system and the full faith and credit of the United States in one fell swoop. We might as well take a zero off of our money. We can't afford to do that for all kinds of reasons. And so you need to fix this one at a time. It'd be nice if we could figure out how to fix it 1,000 at a time, if we could speed up the process, if we could get some certainty back into the marketplace, and so that we could then attract some private capital. I think the Republicans would love to see private capital come in and take advantage of the hopefully future bullish market that will exist around, you know, U.S. Real estate values.
Jerry, it's good to hear your optimism that we are going to have a return to some good days again in the real estate markets. I share that as well. We sure got a lot to deal with, and it is a regionalized problem, as you point out. It's actually a problem that needs to get worked through one loan at a time. And there may not be a political solution. I really strongly believe there is not a political solution here. It's just intelligently dealing with this one loan at a time. And I hope people reach out and get your thoughts on this, municipalities and many attorneys that are working through this. You're a wealth of knowledge and information and experience on this important topic of foreclosures and how to do it in an intelligent and responsible manner. Jerry, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us, and I hope you have a blessed rest of the Labor Day holiday, and thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave, and we'll talk again soon.
Jerry, I look forward to that. Folks, our guest has been Jerry Ault, the president of LOGS, and I encourage you to go to their website. It's www.logs.com. Again, www.logs.com. Well, that wraps it up for this week, folks. I hope you're having a great Labor Day, and I do look forward to talking to you again next week. Tune in and tell others about the broadcast. We've got thousands upon tens of thousands of listeners nationwide, and it's because you, our faithful listeners, have been sharing the message and getting the word out. Appreciate it very much. Have a great Labor Day, everybody.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.